The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am so fired up that this next gentleman is going to join the show, because when I think of great historians of the Jordan Bulls, and when I think of people intertwined with all of the stories of the Jordan Bulls, this is one of the first guys that comes to mind. He is a terrific writer for so many years with the Chicago Tribune, now with Bulls.com. He's got so many great books out, The Jordan Rules, The Second Coming, There Is No Next, and he's been, you know, a TV star in many ways, and checking him out on The Last Dance. Let's welcome in the great Sam Smith, who's nice enough to give us a couple minutes. Sam, it's John Jastrzemski. I appreciate the time. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Thanks for those nice words. But, it's not good having me on TV too long, and I'm better looking on radio.
I don't know about that, Sam. I think you're looking quite spiffy on TV. Don't be selling
like
yourself short.
That was my pink shirt. It kind of distracted from things, I guess.
There you go.
Hey, so you ain't kidding. On TV, I wouldn't have worn the pink shirt, I don't think.
If only we would have known, right? Like the classic what ifs. I mean, I could go down this road like for 50 zillion scenarios in my life. But in all seriousness, you think about what's going on now in society, and for us as sports fans to relive, you know, some of these great Jordan moments. And as a guy, Sam, who grew up a New York Knicks fan in the 1990s, I'm not looking forward to the Charles Smith Memorial. I'm not looking forward to the double nickel when Jordan came back wearing 45. But in all seriousness, it's been really great therapy, and it's been a great distraction for so many people who are looking for it at this time.
Yeah. It's difficult for the Knicks, obviously, but those are, you know, amazing series. The Knicks fell on the other side of so many. Even 92, that seven-game series, probably as close as the Bulls came, other than the Pacers in 98, you know, to lose in a series, playoff series during that time. And so you can imagine Pat Riley with the only ifs as well. The timing, of course, is remarkable, given the circumstances. Unfortunately, you know, with the health crisis going on and, no live sports. And, so as a result, we've ended up talking about this all the way through the week as well. And it's sort of interesting the way they've done it. You know, so much TV in this era is streaming, and you just watch multiple episodes in a row, and this is kind of like it was 30 years ago. You got to wait each week for the next episode, and always not used to that. But it's actually surprised me a little bit how much even people in Chicago, and I think part of that function of that is when you're winning, the team's successful, you don't want to hear about the other stuff, you know, the internal fighting or whatever was going on with Jerry Krause or Dennis Rodman. And so I think it's opening up a lot of people's eyes to the sort of the breadth of the story that, you know, we who are here knew. But people, you sort of say, don't bother us with the details, you know, just tell us who won.
Sam, being around the Bulls, starting with the beginning of Michael Jordan's career, and obviously he had great success in North Carolina, and he was a highly touted prospect. When was the moment for you in covering those Bulls teams where you're like, holy smokes, this guy's got a chance to be one of the best to ever do it? Like, what game kind of like stands out that was like the turning point for you in like looking at this player in like a totally different light?
Well, the first day of practice in an old Catholic school gym with a concrete floor they used to use, Rob Thorne, the GM who drafted him, wasn't there, and Michael dominated the practice, and Bill Blair, who was Bulls' assistant then, back in the era when there was one coach and one assistant, called Rod and said, "You haven't, for a change, you haven't blown this draft." And then on day two, Kevin came back to the Bulls' offices earlier, and Rod was just about to go over to practice, and he said, "What are you doing here? Just practice." And Kevin said, "I had to call it off." And remember, the Bulls had, in that era, had been pretty bad. So they had a team full of high, what we call lottery picks then. There was no lottery yet until 85. But you know, Orlando Woolridge, players who had decent careers and were certainly big-time college players, all top five, top ten picks, some veterans. And so Kevin said, well, I had a call off practice early, Rutz. Why'd you do that? He said, well, you know, on defense, he stole the ball every time. And on offense, he went down and dunked everybody on everybody every time. And everybody got so discouraged, I had to call off practice because they were so depressed. And so we were seeing and hearing things like this guy just walked into the NBA, and wow. I remember when the scout, Mike Tebow, who is now the WNBA Washington champion coach, was a Bulls scout back then. And after the draft, he said, you know, this is a guy who probably is going to be a perennial all-star. And, you know, that was pretty much assured like a week or two into the season when he hit a game winner in Milwaukee. He had, 49 points against Portland. It was extraordinary to see him burst on the scene and do what he was doing against players in what many still consider the greatest year in the NBA in the mid-'80s with Bird and Magic and, you know, great teams with Dominique in Atlanta, Doc in Philadelphia, Pistons building. There was so much depth and so much strength in the league back then. And, you know, this kid comes in and is just dominating people. It's amazing.
I'm glad you brought up the Pistons, because if you go back to last Sunday, that was the primary focus of the Bulls trying to get over the hump. They make the coaching change. They say goodbye to Doug Collins. They bring in Phil Jackson. They lose another tough series in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you see them all in the gym, Sam, trying to get built, trying to put on that muscle to withstand what Detroit was going to do. You were a part of so many of those celebrations after championships, after getting to an NBA Finals. Would you say the emotion in the room was at its highest point when they finally were able to get past Isaiah and Dumars and Chuck Daly and those teams that were like a thorn in their side for so many years?
Well, yeah, they showed that great celebration on the plane, you know, coming back. Unfortunately, you know, Jerry Krause dancing probably didn't highlight it and, you know, focused a little bit on, you know, some of the issues Jerry had with the players over the years. But, yeah, you heard Ian Michael, you know, in one of those segments say, and it was true, that winning, beating the Pistons really meant more than winning a championship. It's great to winning a championship, sort of, you know, icing on the cake kind of thing, because, you know, even that season, I remember that season very vividly, actually. You know, I sort of stumbled into it. That was the season I picked, you know, arbitrarily to say, well, I'm going to write a diary according to Jordan rules, and it happens to be that season. So, you know, luck is a lot better than skill in a lot of cases. But I remember early that season, you know, they had been knocked out of the playoffs by the Pistons, like, you know, three straight years. And, you know, Pippen had the migraine headache, and the year before he'd gotten a concussion in game the first minute of Game 6, and they got blown out in that one in Chicago. And so now we go into Detroit right before Christmas, and the Bulls have yet to win in Auburn Hills. And they just get blown out, lose by 20-something. And you know, Phil, after the game, is the first time I'd ever heard him say that. He's saying, well, maybe this team can't do it. You know, maybe we'd have to make some changes. You know, Michael's furious. You know, you got to have Buck Williams. He wants Walter Davis. You know, he wants more players. And that's, you know, 2 months into that season. You know, so they're thinking. And then Isaiah gets hurt. It wasn't mentioned, you know, much. But Isaiah broke his wrist, I think it was, and missed like 3 months of that season. So then they went into Auburn Hills and won right before the All-Star break. But Isaiah wasn't playing. So it was still pretty uncertain for them, and so they're talking that season, you know, can we get by Detroit? And then that's really all it was. And, you know, back then in the NBA, the notion was you had to get to the finals and fail to learn what it was about and then to win. Like, you know, Bird with when he came with Magic, and then, you know, the Pistons versus the Celtics. And so now it was Portland's turn. They had lost to Detroit in the finals, and now Portland started that season 19-1. It was just running away with everything. They were so far ahead of the rest of the league. The Bulls, you know, were to themselves were saying, well, you know, this is Portland's turn, and, you know, we just got to concentrate on getting past Detroit. So, yeah, that was really, I'm sure all those players would agree on that same thing. That was the most satisfying series probably they ever played.
We got the great Sam Smith, Bulls.com, a great historian of those Jordan Bulls teams. And Sam, obviously the rivalry between the Knicks and the Bulls for me as a New York guy hits home, and they had some classic battles over the years. And, you know, a lot of people in New York, and I might agree with them, look at the 92-93 Knicks team. That was the number one seed, even though they didn't go to seven games. But I looked at that as the team that had the best shot at taking down Michael. They get the 2-0 advantage. The stories are everywhere about Jordan going down to Atlantic City. And being around that, I feel in many ways it inspired Michael to another level, because all of this criticism was out there. He's, you know, checked out. He's not all in. And when that started to add up, I mean, you're only poking the bear and you're making matters that much worse. Did you look at 92-93 with the Knicks as a team that was the number one seed, a team that had this unbelievable run winning games at Madison Square Garden, as a team that was going to take down Chicago that season, or did you never buy it?
No, I thought it was possible. It wasn't a great team by any standards. It was a tough team. It was sort of Pistons light. You know, it was a dirty team, very physical team. And what was ever really more present was Michael was really worn out that season. Like you said, they didn't get home court advantage. The Knicks had a slightly better record, and came down to the last game of the season. I remember. I was actually in the locker room with the Knicks. I had gone to them to see, and I remember the Knicks finished their game early and stayed in the locker room listening to the Bulls finish on radio to see if they'd got the number one seed, and so they were in position. But and I think that's what led to Michael, although they call it the last dance, and he was denied from playing again. That really wasn't. That really, to me, wasn't the case. He recognized the strain of what 97-98 was going to be, and remembering back to 92-93, and then the media oddly piling on. I remember that it was such an erroneous kind of story, and going down to Atlantic City between games. New York Times was outraged, as I recall, and. I remember somebody asking me, said, about it, him getting in at 2. I said, yeah, he sounds like he's resting. He usually gets in at 5. So, but to the Bulls, I remember, they ended a game 2, a spectacular from New York. Starks has that big dunk on Jordan, and the Knicks are up, up 2-0. And the Knicks go to Chicago, and I remember this resonated with the Bulls a lot. They went in there and said, hey, we just got to, win one game. And, it sort of was a signal to the Bulls, because they never approached anything like that. They never approached things like, hey, even at first finals when you go to L.A., if we can get a game, we can get back to Chicago. They always thought about winning every game. And they saw the Knicks as mentally weak from that. And that they saw, that they were saying, because the Knicks took a beating that first game, in the game 3, got blown out. It really showed very little resistance. We'll just count on winning at home. And then Jordan, I think game 4, had like 54 or something. Because I think he was sick. He was a little sick in game 3 and coming out of game 2. And I think mentally, with Jordan too, they were just so much mentally a stronger team. And, that was the weakness sort of Patrick, that he wasn't a great finisher. Didn't have, the pieces around them weren't finishers. They had nobody to throw the ball to, Starks, Mason, Charles Smith. They didn't have that Jordan figure that was going to finish the game for you. Patrick, needed to make a jump shot for the most part. And so, I remember that vividly, like when they won those two mid games. Now, of course, they got to block Charles Smith in the basket like 4 times, to get at a game, at game 5 like that. But I remember them saying after game 4, we got this. They don't know how to win. And, I thought that was an interesting element of that series.
Sam, everybody has a theory for Michael Jordan's first retirement. Obviously, the passing of his father, the wear and tear of the 3 straight finals. I'm curious, you're around that situation. It was one of the more stunning pieces of news you're ever going to get. To this day, and I'm sure you're going to be featured on this when we watch later on when The Last Dance discusses it and whatnot. What was your theory to why Michael walked away the first time?
it was pretty simple. I mean, that season, like I said, was where he was burned out. You got to remember, you know, not only the celebrity, but all the gambling stuff. And, you know, before that, there was this, you know, the Slim Buller in 91. He went to this gambling party instead of going to White House. And, you know, it was not nice people. And, you know, drug dealers, bail bondsmen, somebody got murdered. I mean, unbeknownst to him. But, you know, you go to a, you know, six-figure gambling weekend kind of thing. It's not, you know, high school teachers are not showing up. So, you know, there's that. You know, some guy wrote a book, Sadie Welch, on his golf debts. You know, the media is pounding him now. And, you know, he was angry about that because he was so accommodating, so open, so cooperative, did every interview in the 80s. And he's feeling like, hey, you know, you guys turned on me like this. It's, you know, after all, you know, all I've done, not like done for you, but as cooperative as I've been, as accommodating, you know, and everyone's hammering me now. And then you got the 91 season, you know, they win the championship, 92, with, you know, the strip, my book probably contributes to it, the Jordan rules. He's answering stuff on that. And then the Olympics. So he doesn't get the summer off, you know, so they go, you know, they go to Dream Team and they spend the summer, you know, doing that. I mean, the games weren't hard, but, you know, he's away from everything, you know, and then you get into the next season with all this building up. And I remember players telling me late that season, you know, he's saying on the plane, you know, this is the last you're going to see me. And I'm thinking, nah, you know, he's just burned out. He'll be fine after the summer. And you know, then with all that on top of that, he was very close with his father. They were like best friends. And his father was, James was great. You know, and Michael was having tough times. He'd get mad and stop talking to the media during those playoffs some years because of the gambling stuff. James would come around and say, hey, he's not mad at you guys. You know, don't worry. You know, he's pushing, wanting to push the team. You know, he's frustrated and all like that. And, you know, as close as they were and you know, this happens, it is just devastating for him. And his father had always, I remember them talking about it even in the late 80s, talking to George Shinn and on the Charlotte then, talking to Jerry Reinsdorf with the Bulls. You know, can Michael play the summer for a single A team? Try out, see I can do. You know, James's hope for Michael, as much as he appreciated, you know, obviously everything Michael achieved in basketball, was as a baseball player when he was young. And so, you know, Michael got that idea of that as a way to honor his father. I mean, just think logically. What's the chance the NBA, under any circumstances, wants their greatest attraction, not in the game, over gambling of all things? So, in fact, I remember it. You know, I was at the Chicago Tribune all those years, and so we did an investigation with the Slim Buller and the gambling, all these issues that were raised at that time. And so we would go down and, you know, see this Slim Buller guy and some of the others. And every time we went to interview someone, we'd say, well, what did the NBA investigators ask you? And they said, well, we didn't talk to anyone from the NBA. they did no investigation at all. They didn't ask it. They didn't want to hear anything. They did not want Michael Jordan out of basketball for what he meant and what he was. So that's all. That's what it was. I mean, I know Americans prefer conspiracies to the truth, but that's all that happened.
Okay, Sam. Assuming Jordan plays 93, 94, 94, 95, obviously the loss of Horace Grant hurt him dramatically in that Orlando series. But if they had peak Michael Jordan, are we looking at the Chicago Bulls winning 8 straight championships?
No. No, I mean, they might not. The only one they could have probably won, you know, like I said, because Michael was so burned out. There was no way. And part of it is the way he approaches the game. I mean, you know, everybody talks about 48 minutes, but he does play that way. He gets on the court and is challenging you right away and playing at an incredible high level. And I think that's why, you know, there was no load management with Michael. He never missed games. I mean, just if you look over his history, you know, he went so many seasons. When he came back in 95, he did not miss a single game for 3.5 years, you know, in his mid-30s. He never didn't play, and he never took games at half speed. So there was that element that there was no way he could sustain through 8. But even more than that, Houston was the ultimate bad matchup for them. The Rockets with Akeem and Otis Thorpe up front particularly, and Vernon Maxwell, who really, not that he stopped Jordan, but he was so erratic. You know, he challenged and cursing Jordan and chasing him all over the place and yelling at him. And Jordan would get his 35, but it would be an effort. Houston had a winning record against the Bulls in the Bulls those three championship years, and they were the only team that did. And so if Houston got to the finals, as they did those 2 years, it was going to be tough for the Bulls to beat them under any circumstances. Now, once Horace Grant left, they were too vulnerable to Orlando, obviously. And, you know, that Orlando team really was one of the one of the dynasties that weren't. You know, that should have been a dynasty with Shaq and Penny was – you know, Penny was pretty close to Jordan even in that era. People don't realize how great Penny Hardaway was, you know, and the pieces they had with Nick Anderson and Dennis Scott. But anyways, you know, obviously changed to L.A. So, no, they could have, you know, because Horace was still there in 93, 94, they could have maybe gotten one more. But Houston, you know, Houston could have beaten them. The matchups that Houston had, Thorpe, gave Grant a lot of trouble because he was just as athletic and stronger. Akeem, you know, Cartwright, Purdue, you know, Akeem would go for 50 against them. And, you know, Vernon bothered Maxwell. You know, Vernon bothered Michael a lot. So it would have been a tough series for them. And then, you know, there's no way Michael's coming back at the level he did, like in 95. Not as athletic, obviously, but energized and ready to go, like I say, playing every game. Had he strained through all those years like that.
Sam, final one, and I'm loving these stories. I mean, this is my time period. This is like my coming of age watching NBA basketball, so I could sit here. I can't wait to read your books. I have one of them right now in the apartment, and during this time, it's going to be great with the show going on. Obviously, it ties in. Final one, though. In 97-98, all of the smoke around the team. You know it's Phil's last year. There's the question with Scotty and whether or not he's going to be traded and what his future is looking like. Did you know, covering the team day in and day out, this is it? Like, were you one of these guys that bought into that idea 1,000%? Or were you in some ways maybe holding out that, oh, it's the Bulls, they'll find a way to keep a good chunk of these guys together? Or did you know right then and there, in Utah, in Salt Lake City, this is the last time we're going to see this?
Well, let me say, Phil was always, and Phil used to counsel Michael, you know, everybody, never say never in the NBA. You know, so there was always, and when Michael would retire, you know, the various times he did, he would always say, I'm 99.9% sure. You know, so nobody ever said that. But I believe going into the season, there were two elements that I think Michael and Phil knew that this was the end, and they didn't want to play beyond that season, but what a great motivational force it would be, you know, an opportunity to take another crack at Krause, but also to have, you know, Phil always, you know, came up with a storyline for the season. There was different ones over all six different ones each year. And, you know, Michael always, you know, with Jeff Van Gundy, you know, who called him a con man or whatever, Michael would manufacture all these outrages that he would fight against. And so here was this perfect one. But Phil, you know, being the son of ministers, Pentecostal ministers, and, you know, sort of viewing his team really like a congregation, he'd always said that your voice, the congregation loses your voice after 7 years, and this was the year 9 for him. So he was ready to go. He could have gotten a long-term deal to stay with the Bulls to go through some sort of rebuilding. But he wasn't interested in that. He didn't want to start over again with a young team after doing that. And then beyond that, Michael saw what was going around. It wasn't so much that they were you're going to trade Scotty, is that Scotty was going to be a free agent. And, you know, he postponed his surgery, so he would purposely miss the first half of the season. You know, he realized that Scotty had severed ties with the Bulls, and he sees this the summer of 97. And he also knows Dennis was just coming off a playoff where he got a technical in every game. You know, he got fined by the league for demeaning Mormons. And you know, so he thinks there's no way Dennis is going to sustain through this very long. So, and you heard him in even the show when Dennis was going to Vegas. He said, you know, you're leaving me all alone. Obviously, he wasn't. You know, Ron Harper, Tony Kukoc, Luke Walton, there were a lot of guys there. But in his mind, you know, I didn't have Scotty and Rodman. That was it. So, I think Michael's view going into that season was, what a perfect way to end it. I get through one more. I've come back for 3 years after I said I would never play again. and this is the way to finish it. I could strain to this finish line. I don't think I could strain anymore.
The terrific Sam Smith. Sam, appreciate a couple of minutes, my friend. I mean, we could go through these stories for hours. So I've enjoyed watching you. I enjoy reading you. Keep up the good work, my friend. You're a lifer every which way. And when I think Chicago Bulls, what can I say? I think of you. So appreciate the time, okay?
All right, thank you. Good to talk to you.
There you have it. That's Sam Smith of thebulls.com. And obviously all those years, spending time with Michael Jordan for the Chicago Tribune. A couple of books, a couple of great stories, unbelievable perspective. Disagrees with me on the idea that the Bulls would not have won eight consecutive. He thought the Houston Rockets might have found a way to get them in either 93, 94, 94, 95.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.